Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Ben Marshall, a reluctant activist and chair of a community group called Solve, supporting our Lungana Valley environment. In their remote mountain valley, they're politically diverse but pro-action on climate, though they find themselves in the unexpected position of fighting what appears on the surface to be a good thing, the renewables industry. They didn't expect this to happen when they first objected to a Hughes transmission line through their beautiful valley, but then found out the realities of politics and of the corporatization of the transition from fossil fuels. So first off, thank you for your work in the world. And second, thank you for being on the program.
You're welcome.
So can you tell people a little bit about the natural world in Tasmania, and then specifically sort of move us down to the Lungana Valley?
Okay, happy to. Tasmania is a large island state to the south of the Australian mainland. It features World Heritage areas. It's got a cool, temperate climate. We have unique flora and fauna, a couple of small cities, and a mainly rural-based population. We have two reputations. One is as a clean and green wilderness experience, which we provide for ourselves and for tourists. The other reputation we have is the land of the forest wars, which have been waged over many decades by successive corporate-aligned state governments and logging companies against Tasmanians and mainlanders who are trying to protect our native forests and animals. To provide a little more context there, this forest war is mirrored in identical tactics by the industrial scale fish farming companies who leveraged the clean green image to greenwash their unsustainably destructive practices. And now the same tactics are being used by the burgeoning renewables industry. For context on renewables here in Tasmania, we're a very hilly place, and we're largely already around 100% renewable due to our long-standing hydropower dams, which we've shipped a lot of baseload power to the mainland through a single cable at this point. But because it's to a market, and it's a market-driven system rather than a public utility, we've often found ourselves buying back coal-fired power from the mainland when power is scarce in Tasmania. Now, in this new era of refusal to act on climate, and investors from all around the world are being promised a brand new and enormous overhead power grid with which they can plug in their wind farms when they set them up here in Tasmania. And then they can sell that via a new cable to the mainland market. Tasmania is about 200 kilometres off the southern shore of Australia. So when I mention the mainland, I mean what most people will recognise as Australia. The Lungana Valley, where we are, is a beautiful little mountain valley. We get snow a few times a year. About 5 hours hike up the mountain, we get into subalpine forest and growth. But all around us on our little 35 acres, we've got regenerating rainforest, old rainforest, some plantation timber, and we have the most beautiful forests as well. These are iconic forest communities and species like Tasmanian devils, spotted-tailed quolls, which are our top-level predator here, white goshawks, wedge-tailed eagles, and literally hundreds of other species that inhabit our gum forests, our rainforests, and other types of forests. So that's the context for Tasmania and a little bit about our valley. Would you like me to talk about what our major issue is?
Yeah, in a moment. I have just a couple more questions about the specific rainforest, since I myself am so ignorant on this, that I live in a temperate rainforest here in the Pacific Northwest, and it's coniferous, it's redwoods, cedars. And can you talk a little bit about the rainforest? When people think about rainforest, there can be temperate rainforest like this. There can also be tropical rainforest that we think about the Amazon or something. Like, what are the rainforests like there? Are they coniferous, deciduous? Are they are the trees often huge if they're ancient? What are some of the species of the trees? Just give us a brief introduction to the rainforest there.
Sure. We qualify as temperate, cool temperate forests. So lower down towards the coast, they're mostly eucalypts, gum trees. Up here, the gum trees are merging into myrtle forest. And that merges as we go up the mountain into subalpine growth, types of growth. So, for example, if I were to take you through some of the intact original forest in our area, it would be a mix of what we call wattle trees, acacia trees, and myrtle trees. Now, these are big and ancient. They are beautiful. You're walking through open, soft, padded ground padded with fallen leaves. Branches or old trees that have died have quickly covered in lichens, mosses, fungi of all sorts, the most colorful, beautiful fungi, slime molds. It's absolutely rich and teeming with diverse life and forest communities, with every different area, with every different change in altitude. You have often a change of forest, but some of our oldest forests are truly ancient, truly big, and utterly magnificent.
And this is completely off the point, but, well, actually two questions here. One is off the point completely, but we've heard about Tasmanian devils, or I'm sorry, Tasmanian, is that what they're called, Tasmanian devils?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Correct. We've heard about them, and we also have heard they're in terrible trouble. Have you ever seen one? Are they so rare you never see them? And then after that, you mentioned the qualis, which I think I've seen a picture, but I don't think people know about them, and I certainly don't know about them.
Okay. Yes, we have Tasmanian devils here, and yes, they're in trouble. Right across Australia, and particularly in Tasmania, deforestation is occurring at a tremendous rate. Tasmanian devils themselves have unfortunately suffered from a viral-induced mouth and throat cancer, facial tumor syndrome. And this is devastating wild populations. So here in our valley, we have a mix. Further down the valley, we know that there are some of these devils with facial tumor disease, but the ones we have on our property are healthy, and we're working quite hard on our property and the surrounds to track where they are and their general health. They scavenge for their food, so pretty much any animal that dies, and we're talking here in Australia, marsupials and monotremes, like kangaroos, wallabies. The monotremes are the echidnas and the platypus. Any of those animals that dies, and the Tasmanian devil will eat it, the lot, skin, bones, teeth. There is almost nothing left. And so when we go on walks in the morning, we can see a Tasmanian devil or a quail scat by the presence of small bones, fur, and teeth in it. That's all that's left. They're very, very good scavengers. Quolls, that's Q-U-O-L-L. We have the spotted tail quoll. They're another threatened species, just like the devil. And they are the top order predator since the thylacine or Tasmanian tiger, as you may have heard, was killed off at the beginning of last century. So we have many, many other animals such as wombats, echidnas, which would look to you a bit like a porcupine or a hedgehog, or a very large hedgehog, and of course many species of birds, from mountain parrots to raptors to owls. And again, we're all talking species that are threatened or endangered due to land changes, land clearance, and poisons from rodenticides and so forth. So there is everything in this valley. The biodiversity here is astonishing, and all of it is under threat, just like it is all over the world.
Okay, one more question before we get to the main topic. And that question is, you mentioned the timber wars, and I've read about them a little bit, but can you give us like a 3-minute or 5-minute history of the timber wars for those of us in the United States or elsewhere who may not know much about it?
I can give only a brief overview. It's definitely not my specialty topic, but the summary is that what we call the forest wars is largely manufactured by politicians for political advantage. We have a very rural, working class, low educational population here in Tasmania. Jobs of any sort are absolutely critical for families and communities. Now, that urgency is routinely leveraged by politicians from both our major parties here. We have a tradition of centre to centre right opposition party and a right-wing majority party. We also have a Greens party here who routinely pull in around about 10 to 15% of the vote. The forest wars were generated by the aligned interests of politicians seeking to leverage outrage against Greens and so forth, for those who want to keep their jobs in forestry, and the companies who are unsustainably exploiting Tasmania's forest resources. As a result, the fighting has been often one-sided, and the green or progressive movement here, or just those who are non-politically aligned who want to save forests and species here, have had to seek support from mainland Australians to hold on to any national park from being mined or logged. We've fought to protect old growth forests, which are eagerly sought after. But now the fight is shifting to any native forest, as they're called, which is often 50 to 100 to 150 year old regrowth. We've seen in our neighbourhood, we have a mix of plantations and what you could call sustainable timber production. We've seen also a company subsidised largely by taxpayers that will tear down native forests, not for the timber it contains or even the pulpwood it contains, but for the arcane system of subsidies that these companies receive directly and indirectly from the government. So when we talk about forest wars, we're largely talking a manufactured war between the aligned interests of right-wing governments and corporations and those of us who are seeking to preserve at least some parts of our amazing environment and the economy that depends on that amazing environment. Just in briefly, in economic terms, the forestry industry here has some sustainable aspects, but is largely unsustainable and is not economic were it not subsidized heavily by taxpayers. As businesses, it would fall over tomorrow, and that would be a good thing. But as mentioned earlier, we see that also in the industrialized fish farming industry, and we're just starting to see it happening in the renewables industry gold rush here. I hope that gives you a brief sense of what's at play between the powers that be. I should just add one further mention of a significant power broker in all of these arguments or discussions, the media. Our media is, mainstream media, is largely owned by Rupert Murdoch. You'll be familiar with him and his son for running Fox News in the US. The other rural newspapers are largely owned by the figures who are senior in the conservative state government political party. So there is very little holding to account of both politicians and the corporations who work with them. I hope that helps.
Oh, it's all great. This is such a good background. Thank you so much for that. So now that we've done all that, can you talk about either your introduction to the threats to the local region, or talk about the threats to the local region, however you want to do it?
Okay. Well, our story is simple in a way. We came to this region about 3.5 years ago, and we joined a small community here of something like a dozen people. Those dozen people are either like us, they live and work quietly on their properties, or they have small bed and breakfasts. About 2.5 years ago, we heard rumor that a foreign company called UPC Renewables wanted to put a transmission line through the valley. Now, this is a very large transmission line. This isn't the sort of transmission line that goes along your street. This is a high voltage overhead line. The towers are from 45 to 60 meters high. They require easements that are 60 to 90 meters wide. That's the width of one of our football fields. I'm not sure if it's the same width as yours, but say a soccer field width. Now, we assumed that because this company was running a line from their proposed wind farm on a place called Robbins Island in our northwest, where the wind power, the wind resources are very, very top quality. They are very good wind resources up there. We assumed in the beginning that, oh, this is just an unfortunate thing. We support renewable power, and we want a transition away from fossil fuels. So while we were positive about the wind farm, we wondered if they really needed to to bring a high voltage transmission line through our valley, which would cause enormous damage. We saw immediately the kinds of damages it would do, not just to our views and those kind of things, but to the forests and to the animals and raptors and bats and insects that live here. On top of that, they'd damage the water catchment. They'd increase fire risk, and we are in a forest after all, and this is Australia. And it would affect the small-scale local tourism industry. So we started asking questions. We met with the company, and we met with another state-owned corporation, a for-profit corporation called TAS Networks, who were connecting this company to what amounted to a new grid. They called it an upgrade, but essentially it was a new power grid for crisscrossing the entire Northwest. As we started asking questions, and bear in mind that we're just ordinary people. We're, you know, we have no agenda. We vote conservative. We vote liberal. We vote green. We don't give a damn about any of it. We're just an ordinary community. But as we asked questions, we found that the questions, the answers were not clear. Sometimes they were dishonest. Sometimes they were just off the topic. Sometimes they just weren't answered. Long story short, our community had to disappear down a number of rabbit holes to find out what was really going on. And we had to become expert in things we knew nothing about, including the renewables industry. We found out, for example, that UPC, the original company, was proposing to put a wind farm on an island called Robbins Island, which is an internationally critical bird and marine location. It should have been Ramsar listed and turned into a national park, but unfortunately it's owned by some private owners who are very happy for UPC to build giant wind turbines there and make a buck out of it. We found out that the siting of this wind farm was terrible. We found out that UPC themselves hadn't considered even bothering to cost the more expensive offshore turbines in a different, better location. We learned that they hadn't bothered to cost the more expensive but sustainable and non-damaging submarine cabling to link their proposed wind farms to the mainland market. We learned over time that the damage from the not just the overhead lines themselves, but the easements was even worse than we thought. We learned that the government didn't really give a damn about acting on climate, but were doing everything they possibly could to railroad us and people across the Northwest in order to push through a scheme where their state-owned corporation would build an entirely new grid and improve their debt-to-asset ratio while attracting international investors to set up wind farms here who would pay to access this new grid. And then we learned that over 90% of all the power generated here in Tasmania would go to the mainland, accounting for transmission losses. That is, all new renewables power from Tasmania would go to for sale in the market in the mainland. Now, meanwhile, the politicians and the companies are repeating exactly the same phrases. Billions of dollars in investment, thousands of jobs, cheaper, lower power prices. hydrogen economy, green energy. It all sounded good. But as we dug and found out more and more, we learned that none of it was true. Literally, none of it was true. So there we were in a situation where we were being railroaded in our valley to accept a power line that would effectively destroy our valley, and all for the benefit of private companies and private profits, which would all disappear offshore. At this point, our community joined with others in the area and kicked up a bit of a stink. At that point, we also managed to sneak in someone to an industry insiders only energy development conference. And here, government and industry heavyweights met to discuss their strategies going forward. And because we had an insider, we found out what some of their strategies were. Suffice it to say that it was entirely dirty pool. It was both political spin and rolling PR campaign. And that's what we saw. The companies and the government rolled out a taxpayer-funded PR campaign that pretended to be community consultation. And at these community consultation sessions, we were shown by a host of highly professional PR consultants why we should accept this wonderful new transmission grid and so on. When questioned, a lot of the claims were either brushed aside, they'd promise to answer them later on, or they'd just walk away from them. More and more, we realized that there was a con being operated, and it was being operated on us by very, very powerful forces we had no control over. The media, controlled by Murdoch and the Liberal Party. The Liberal Party here is the Conservative Party, by the way, just to confuse you all, were in lockstep with the corporations selling this to ordinary Tasmanians as being billions in investment, cheaper power, thousands of jobs, all good. But just after we started rolling out the banners and getting people, not accepting what was going on, suddenly the government stepped in and took over what was originally going to be paid for by UPC Renewables, the foreign renewables company who wanted to set up on Robbins Island. They took over a big chunk of that. That's the chunk going through our valley. So now we weren't just dealing with a company. We were opposed by the entire state government with the backing of their colleagues in federal parliament on mainland Australia. So we had an even greater hill to climb. Since then, we've fought back using social media. We've joined up with other groups who are in the Robbins Island area. And I should just mention that to give you some idea of the scale of this project, just looking at Northwest Tasmania, it's about 170 kilometres roughly from here to Robbins Island, the northwest corner of Tasmania. I'm not sure what that is in miles, I'm sorry. And transmission lines will go through farms and forests, regardless, right through there. But also, they will be running a new set of high voltage overhead lines to upgrade existing lines. These will be much, much larger. And they are effectively a new power grid. Meanwhile, we're being promised that there are extra new projects in the wings for overseas investors who want to set up, access excellent Tasmanian wind, and connect to the grid to sell their power to the mainland. Again, I'd emphasise that with the power and the profits all going offshore, there is literally no benefit, only costs to Tasmania. Worse, and there are many levels of worse to all of this, UPC Renewables is being given control of the backbone, the critical section of the main transmission line from the proposed renewable energy zone, into which other companies will have to buy access to. So you've got a system where you've handed a monopoly to a private company with extensive foreign-owned, but with extensive interests in China, who will have control over their competitors' access to the market. They will then access two undersea cables. One exists now and goes straight to the mainland, and the other is proposed to be built and also goes to the mainland from a different spot. So there we are, Tasmania. We already run essentially on renewables, and we have a gold rush on renewables about, or effectively starting to happen, but none of the benefits or energy staying here, all benefiting private companies and the government, which takes its cut. And the first thing we said to the first corporate representative we met from UPC, lovely chap, we said to him after he explained what putting a transmission, we said to him, what about the costs to us? He said, oh, there won't be any costs to you. And no, we said, no. We mean the true cost to us. Just because we don't have a power line going literally over the top of our heads or a transmission line running across our properties, that doesn't mean there aren't extensive costs to our environment, which we're working hard to support, which we depend on for our small businesses, and which are sustaining and protecting forest communities and endangered and threatened species. What about the cost to us during construction? What about the cost to us to our water supply? And what about the increased risks of accelerated fire through our valley? When we started talking about these kinds of costs, the corporate representative was baffled and eventually embarrassed when he admitted that never costed any other genuine route beyond the cheapest. And that was through all the green bits on the map. There are less landholders to deal with, and mostly government or other corporations who are engaging in forestry practices. So they couldn't go through farmland because, well, that that would be more contentious. They didn't want to go offshore. That would be more expensive. They didn't want to go underground. That would be more expensive. So there we were, stuck with the cheap, quick option. And I'll give you one final worse part of what we learned. I mentioned a company that is a state-owned company called TasNetworks. Now, our government, both at the state and federal level, doesn't accept or have any interest in action on climate. But they work well with corporations. They handed TasNetworks, who run our old electricity grid and have done for many, many years, they used to be a public utility, but then they privatized or semi-privatized them. They corporatized them and gave them a for-profit mandate. So now they run like any corporation by a CEO for the benefit of shareholders. And this, in this case, the shareholder is the state government. They gave the entire planning for all new renewables development to TasNetworks, this for-profit company. And TasNetworks make money from building and maintaining high voltage overhead power lines. What did their plan emphasize without any costing or consideration for any other technology? High voltage overhead transmission lines. So technically it's not illegal, or technically it's not corrupt, but it is such a total conflict of interest. It should be stopped, and planning should return to the independent public sector. That is never going to happen when we have the government of the day working doggedly for its own interests and those of its donors and those of the corporate investor sector. So that's just a general overview of where we are. There's a lot more to it. We want transition from fossil fuel power. We want a circular economy, but we're getting anything but. What we're getting is a renewables industry that is not sustainable economically, let alone environmentally. And now we're learning from your network the true costs beyond our valley, beyond our state, and beyond our nation, Australia, of a private corporatized renewables industry. And that's how I guess we met up to help you with this radio. Over to you.
Well, thank you for... Sorry, go ahead.
No, it's all yours.
So thank you for that. I thought that was thank you for that very, very clear description. And there's a couple things I want to say or ask. One of them is that one of the reasons I really wanted to interview you was because you are so clear and articulate on fighting an issue that honestly, people are fighting all over the world. There are people in Germany, people in Honduras, people in the United States, people in Canada who are fighting these transmission lines in similar situations. And so I just wanted to say, and you know this, but I just wanted to say you're not alone in this. There are so many who are doing this. So I wanted to say that. And then the other thing I wanted to say is you mentioned early on just the direct effects of the transmission line. And I just want to put a language on this that is that when they put in a transmission line through a forest, that is, I think you said 90 meters, 70 meters.
It's 60 to 90.
Okay. So it's a 60 to 90 meter clear cut that will run for miles. And then once it's clear cut, in some ways it's even worse than a forestry clear cut, because after that they have to continue to apply herbicides. They can't let the forest grow back underneath. So it's just, I just wanted, for people who might not know, I just wanted to emphasize how incredibly harmful transmission lines are to a forest. That's all.
Yes. If I can emphasize that point, we regard the towers and the lines themselves as being terribly damaging and a threat to insects, bats, and raptors, and as a fire risk as well. But the easements under these are what is going to cause the most extensive damage on every single metric. You're absolutely correct. Underneath these lines has to be kept clear. We are also in a situation where there is the option of best practice management of easements, and there is worst practice management. Now, worst practice management is to create them, walk away, and pay a company to come along once or twice a year and spray with herbicides as well as slash. Now, that is the one we know will be chosen here. Those workers who perform that job will be very small in number, and they'll mostly be hired by labour hire companies. Now, what that will do to our forest, if I can just highlight our example, when you have that running through your forest, it allows the wind, and especially our prevailing wind, to a tunnel through which to blow. This completely dries out the land of the easement itself, and it dries out the forest deep into the forest either side, hundreds of meters into the forest either side. Because the wind is now fierce and untrammeled, it will blow down many of the trees on the edge. The edge effect of easements is an enormous level of damage, again, to the forest communities on either side. They will change, they will dry up, and they will become a greater fire threat as drier species of eucalypts replaces wet rainforest species. On top of that, please think about prey and predator animals that now occupy our forests. Suddenly, they have to cross 60 to 90 meters. That's a soccer field wide target zone. Smaller creatures will not be able to cross that safely. Even larger creatures will be extremely reluctant to do so. Worse, these easements are a highway for feral animals. Here in Australia and in Tasmania, we have a devastating feral cat problem. Cats are brilliant animals. They are top-level predators, and they will have carte blanche to, in these easements, to take out small animals. On top of that, you've got the herbicides. That herbicide will go into the soil runoff, but also in this valley, we have a thing called a geology called a karst system, K-A-R-S-T. It's limestone. It means that water will flood in during our plentiful rains. It will disappear into the ground, and it will pop up to supply water for the homesteads here and into the river, where we have some of the most threatened water river species in the world. We don't know how much damage will be done by the herbicides, how far the herbicides will travel, what sort. We do know that erosion will be massive, and that fine silt will flood the karst system. These are delicate, these include delicate, critically endangered cave ecosystems, which will be flooded by silt pollution, herbicides, and other industrial pollutants from diesel waste, from the construction itself, from the use of the maintenance on the easement itself. There is so much more to talk about with the damage from easements. It affects both humans, and it absolutely devastates every ecosystem that it passes through. I cannot emphasize that enough. We could live with the horrible power towers and the lines, even though we know that our critical raptors were being driven extinct. But what it's doing on the ground is as bad or worse. So that's the a couple of extra points on the subject of easements.
Well, thank you so much for that. And we have about 4 or 5 minutes left, and I have two questions. The brief question is, I want to thank you for mentioning insects in among those who are harmed by the power lines, because even among environmental activists, so often insects are ignored in favor of more charismatic megafauna. So I want to explicitly thank you for attending to them. And if you want to mention anything about them, that's fine. And then the other question is, how do people help? What would you want somebody listening to this, either A, who lives in the United States, or, well, A, who lives in Tasmania, or B, lives anywhere else in the world, what would you want them to do to help specifically solve or more generally the problem? So first off, anything on insects apart from thank you again for mentioning them? And two, how can somebody, what do you want from anybody who hears this? Three. And how do people find out more? Tell us about your website. Those are the three things.
Okay. I would say to anybody who is feeling a bit hopeless and helpless, we've reached out to other communities who are just starting the journey that we've been on for a couple of years. If you want to find out our journey, you will find out what lies ahead for you, whether you are in Texas, in Estonia, if you are in Canada, it does not matter where you are in the world. We are fighting the same fight. Go to our website, and it is this, Solve Tasmania. That's S-O-L-V-E, Tasmania, one word, .org. SolveTasmania.org. There you can find lots of resources. You can find our story. You can find, in brief, the breakdown of what towers and easements do, what the true costs are, and you can see our model for distributing information. We operate as a community group to receive information and pass it immediately out to anybody else who needs it. So come and visit the website, see what lies ahead of you, find out how you can help yourself or perhaps help us by going onto our Facebook page as well and like, share, and all that kind of stuff. Make comments, and you're very welcome to talk to politicians here about the concerns you have.
Well, thank you so much for all of that, and thank you for your work in the world. And I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Ben Marshall. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.